Hello, everybody. Welcome to Beyond a Different World. And this is our fourth episode, episode four. And as I usually stated last week, I want to start it off with words of encouragement for the week. So this week's words of encouragement is from Gandhi, and it is, keep your thoughts positive because your thoughts become your words. Keep your words positive because your words become your behavior. Keep your behavior positive because your behavior becomes your habits. Keep your habits positive because your habits become your values. Keep your values positive because your values becomes your destiny. I think that was that's really a good thing for me to start off with, because my heart is heavy. My heart is heavy over the events that had happened over the weekend in Charlottesville, Virginia. And and this will bring me to introducing our guest for this week, for this episode, Dr. Fanning, who is the Associate Professor of World History here at RMU. And I mean, honestly, Dr. Fanning, over what happened in Charlottesville, I mean, that is literally, my heart is heavy. For those who do not know, there were a white nationalist rally.
Let's just call them Nazis. Just call them what they are. They're Nazis.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there was a Nazi rally.
Sorry, if you're marching with under a swastika with a Sieg Heil salute, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're a Nazi.
There it is. Yeah. There was a Nazi rally entitled "Unite the Right,"
which sounds like the worst supervillain group name ever.
Ever.
Like, couldn't you have gone with like the League of Evil Mutants or something? Could you have gone with that? But no.
Right.
Yeah, trying to make themselves seem mainstream.
Exactly. And where, you know, it was very violent. A lot of people were rocking around angry with tiki torches.
Yeah, you gotta wonder how much planning really went into this when it's like, oh man, we need torches, but is there a Lowe's open? Or, you know, yeah, I mean, come right. on now.
Exactly.
Oh,
but,
my God.
I mean, however, I mean, it witnessed, you know, you get to see in the forefront, you know, the reemergence of the KKK and the Nazis. You know, those hate groups that, you know, have been in the past and done so much horrible things. And I mean, that's why, you know, my heart is heavy. Like,
I don't blame you. I was nauseous.
Yes.
For the better part of 36 hours.
Yes.
Interspersed with a slightly less nauseous bouts of rage.
Mm.
For a number of reasons. And then, look, and no, I'm glad you have this as a radio show, because, you know, believe me, my face is perfect for radio.
I appreciate it.
But if any of you could see me, look, I'm about as lily white cracker as they come. Okay, you know, my forebears came from Scandinavia. You know, for me, ketchup is spicy. You know, the whole thing.
Right.
But to see these people claim to speak for me, for just an instant, I had kinship with every American Muslim on 9/11. Mm. Who just thought, I mean, just, it, and I'm not saying I've gone through what they haven't. Because, look, I know I got privilege pouring out of my pores. I never asked for it, but I got it. So I'm not trying to equate the two experiences, but for a moment, I could empathize.
Mm.
For a moment. Because it was... There's something, as terrifying as it must be for people of color, as terrifying as it must be for people of, you know, different ethnicities, different gender identities, different sexualities, as horrible as that is, and I'm not saying that it's less horrible, to see people provoking terror, provoking violence. I mean, I'm sorry, it's not free speech when you show up with rifles, truncheons, and armor.
Exactly.
You're spoiling for a fight.
Right.
And to say that these people, that they're trying to represent me, was just infuriating.
Mm.
So I'm in no way saying that my experience trumps, no pun intended,
no pun.
Anyone else's. But, you know, from my position as, you know, a straight, white, cisgendered male, that was my reaction. It was just horror.
Mm.
And in part because... And, you know, again, maybe that's just the bubble that naturally, when you are the majority, springs up around you. I was dismayed enough with the rampant racism,
mm-hmm.
with the election of Barack Obama, because I honestly thought we'd move past all that.
Hmm.
Which, you know, shows what I know, but I learned that way. So, you know, okay, I learned that lesson. That's one thing. Mm-hmm. I can easily wrap my head around the fact that, okay, as a white guy, I cannot know what people of color go through. Therefore, I have to be open to learning.
Right. And I mean, honestly, to see that, and to see everything that Barack Obama has went through in his presidency, it shows you it does not matter the caliber, or does not matter your credentials. It does not matter, you know, where you are at life. I mean, you are still viewed as your skin color.
Well, right. And that's just one of many. I mean, what's perversely fascinating about this particular slime mold of humanity, mm-hmm. Is that look at all the people that they will not associate with. They will not associate with anyone in the LGBT community. They will not associate with anyone who is not a Christian, although I would argue, given what they're preaching, they don't know what Christianity is.
Right.
They will not associate with people of color. I'm like, you just alienated 95% of humanity. It's ridiculous. And to go off, you know, it was one thing to see just straight racism under Barack Obama. To see Nazis, and by the way, I am getting such a delight of seeing these people now frantically trying to disavow themselves as the internet identifies these people mm-hmm. who didn't hide their faces, who are that proud to be a Nazi, you know, and thinking, well, I have a right to free speech. Yeah, but you don't have a right to no consequences.
Exactly.
So I'm sorry, I'm kind of ranting here.
You're absolutely astounding. Right. I mean, it is astounding. It is astounding because when seeing that and watching, you know, the footage and seeing individuals pushing the police, like pushing the
and
police.
And they all went home alive.
Yes. I mean, and to think of that and it literally took me back to those individuals. Like, there was individuals that were out there that were calling the Black Lives Matter movement a hate group.
Right. And, you know, an interesting thing about that, I am in no way, please, this is my disclaimer, I am in no way forgiving those reprobates who are going to call BLM a hate movement, mm-hmm. a hate group, because that's insanity. But you have to sort of, okay, so what separates out a white nationalist Nazi from a conservative or a cultural conservative?
Okay.
Okay. Cultural conservatives don't like Black Lives Matter because it makes them feel uncomfortable. Like, why do we have to keep rehashing the bad things that happened in the past? Now, as a historian, my argument would be, well, until you fix them,
right,
you have to be reminded. And even afterwards, you do remind yourself constantly so you don't make those mistakes again.
Right.
That's what we grown-ups call learning. But it's not a sense that, I don't think they see BLM as a hate group. I would say like maybe 70 to 80%.
No, there's people out there.
Oh, there are. Yeah. But I'm just saying, I think 70 to 80% of the people who, you can see them sort of squirming in their seats, you know, and then they get that, but all lives matter. Mm-hmm. You know, it's sort of, that's just their way of saying, well, not me. Because they're terrified of being called racist. Now, the people who consider BLM a hate group, these are the same dead-enders who think that Alex Jones is right, that the Earth is flat, that chemtrails are a thing, that Barack Obama was a Kenyan, and by the way, a communist. And I got to tell you, if Barack Obama was a communist, he was a horrible one, and it should probably have his card revoked.
Right.
They believe such cockamamie things. But it's all in the defense of a worldview that is so askew, you have to believe 16 wrong things to justify it. This idea, now, and I'm choosing my words carefully, because I know anyone who is a Nazi, anyone who flies a Confederate flag, in my view, and we're going to get to that.
Yes.
Anyone who consider themselves a white nationalist, at that point, you're too far gone. You're supping with the devil at that point. You know what you're getting into. So the question becomes, what possibly motivates somebody to do that? The problem is there is a tiny kernel of a legitimate issue at the heart of all that.
Okay.
And that's the vast majority of these people. Not your Richard Spencers who are leading it, not your David freaking Dukes, but your average mouth breather that takes up. And yes, I'm being nasty. That's deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
They have been, like so many other people in the United States, economically left behind. Their prospects in 2017, by the way, which you'd think would foster solidarity with Black Americans, with Latino Americans, with, you know, Muslim Americans. Mm-hmm. They've been marginalized. You know, it is a statement of fact to say throughout my lifetime, I was born in 1973, wages, real wages, in terms of the purchasing power, have been stagnant or falling for 99% of the American electorate.
Mm.
I mean, over the, well, okay, 95%. Over the past 10 years, all the economic gains, statistically speaking, have gone to the top. And I'm talking like the top 1%. So they look back at the 1950s and they don't see Jim Crow. You know, and they don't see women not being allowed to be full participatory citizens. Mm-hmm. And they don't see, you know, Jews being told to stay in their neighborhoods and all that. They don't see that. They see a day and age in which an American family could have one wage earner, only one person working, full time, without a college degree, pay off a house in 10 years, pay off a car in 3, and take 5 weeks vacation.
Mm.
That's what they see. Now, that's the kernel.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that you run into, however, is what you do with that kernel. And unfortunately, rather than identifying, for want of a better term, the people who, you know, or the factors that are really making your life miserable, they go for the completely wrong direction. Oh, it's those people who don't look like me. Because to their eyes, they see things like affirmative action. They see things like scholarships just for women and say, oh, they're being shown to the head of the line ahead of me.
Oh, wow. That's true.
That's how they see it.
That's true.
And it's real easy to demagogue because, look, I just spent 3 minutes running off at the mouth
and nah, you're good.
Trying to explain this whole process. It is a complicated story. And unfortunately, the worst part about it, and one of the reasons Trump was elected, is that he deliberately did not tell the truth to what he called the forgotten Americans.
Mm.
You know, we've heard this, the Obama-Trump voters.
Mm-hmm.
The people out in rural America who are, honest to God, really struggling to make ends meet regardless of color. I mean, there are a lot of very poor white families out there. But their condition has nothing to do with the status of Black families or Latino families or Islamic families or anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
If Trump was being honest, which I honestly truly don't think he's capable of being, he would have said, here's the problem. Right now we are going through a technological revolution at least as equal to the Industrial Revolution. Now, look, I know I'm a historian, so we can go down a rabbit hole, but I'll make this quick.
Now you're good.
In 1800, right before the Industrial Revolution really picked up steam, pun intended, 90% of people were farmers. Especially in Britain, which was really the heart of the Industrial Revolution. By 1900, only 10% were.
Mm.
And yet there was more food available. So something along the lines of 80% of those jobs vanished in two generations. Disappeared, gone, forever. That was a huge disruption to society at the time. Because you have people lived this way for literally thousands of years, now having to suddenly become city dwellers. And cities really weren't that common in 1800. Now they're everywhere in 1900.
Mm.
It was incredibly jarring. We are going through that process right now. But the people taking their jarbs, listen, see, you can tell I'm getting a little exercise. The people taking these old backbone of America in 1950 blue-collar jobs are not Latinos scrambling over the border.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not, inner city Chicago Black people that got the job instead of them. No, they're not human at all. They're called robots.
Mm.
That's the problem. But no one wants to admit that because there's no good solution. You can't turn back the clock. You can't stop progress. But it's also easy to demagogue. It's easy just to look at people, those people, that people. You know, I saw a stat that blew my mind. And then I'm going to shut up and let you get a word in edgewise here.
Hey, no, I mean, I'm listening. Very enlightening.
Some stat that something like 60% of all white Americans, and this is not the dead-ender, mouth-breathing white lives, you know, White Lives Matter, which is horrible, group. Hmm. But just all white people honestly thought all black people got to go to college for free.
62%?
Something like 60%.
Wow.
They honestly did. And not because they were raised necessarily by Archie Bunker, but just because there was this idea that somehow that's what affirmative action meant. It meant that we're going to pay for black people to go to college, but white people have to pay. Now, that's ignorance. Now, ignorance is not a bad thing. Ignorance is the absence of knowledge.
Right.
Willful ignorance, however, when you're told the truth and refuse to believe it, that is a problem.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's literally everything that we're going through now.
Oh, absolutely. And unfortunately, this is a cancer that has been incubated in the American body politic for 150 years. Mm. Now, I know that some eagle-eyed people out there say, the Nazis haven't been around for 150 years.
And right.
Good on you. You're absolutely right. But in my view, the problem lies in the way the Civil War ended. Because, Abraham Lincoln was assassinated officially before the final Confederate army surrendered.
Right.
And I promise there is a point to this. Mm-hmm. However, his plan was, he had a problem. Because the position of the Union government was that the Confederate government was illegitimate and illegal. You can't secede. You're not allowed to. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a problem. How do you get a government to surrender when that government, in your eyes, doesn't exist? Mm. Because the problem is Lincoln and his administration, they're looking past the end of the Civil War. By 1865, everyone knew it was a matter of time. So what they're looking at is how do we reintegrate? How do you convince 11 states that had 4 years earlier said, we're out, to stay in? How do you do that without it becoming almost like Vietnam in America, right? With guerrilla warfare
right.
and just ripping society apart. So the pact they made great political sense, but horrible historic sense. The idea was, Lincoln's own words were, let them up easy. In other words, treat it like a family's a son rebelling against the father. Now, this is the 19th century. So, back then, caning was normal in most families. And it was, unfortunate, but it was done with love. Mm-hmm. And the idea was that once this wayward son had learned his lesson, then we would be one big happy family again. But what this also meant, and this is where ceremonies are important. The reason we hold ceremonies is they have tremendous social importance. The Confederacy never had to surrender. And they never had to admit they were wrong. Now, yes, they were under military occupation for the better part of 15 years. Absolutely, not discounting that. But at no point was society, Southern society, compelled to renounce slavery. Mm. All they had to do was admit they lost the war. They didn't even have to say they lost it because the cause was wrong.
Right, right.
A lot of the justification uses, the damn Yankees just had more men and more machines.
Right. And that's the importance of Juneteenth.
Exactly.
That's the importance of Juneteenth. That's why we celebrate Juneteenth, because, it was years after the Emancipation Proclamation. There was still slavery that was going on. There was still these small countries and still these small towns, not countries, sorry. There were still these small towns and small states that still wanted slaves, still had slaves.
Absolutely. And now carry that forward. For 100 years, the Democrats, for the first 50 years, were the arch conservative party in the United States. That started to change around 1910. But for 100 years, they were happy in exchange for a steady block of votes from the South. If you go back and look at electoral maps, that South is solid blue for 100 years. Mm-hmm. All the way up through the election of 1964, in exchange for those votes, we're completely happy to allow Southerners to have this myth of the lost cause. Mm. This idea, basically the justification for Jim Crow. I'm going to give you two examples. The first war that was fought after the Civil War was the Spanish-American War, which doesn't get a lot of attention. Mm. But in a move to unify the country, they appointed General Joseph Wheeler to be in command of the U.S. volunteers in Cuba. Joseph Wheeler is the only, to my knowledge, military officer who has fought both for and against the United States. He's from Alabama. He fought in the Confederacy. He was placed in command, and he was such a diehard, unreconstructed Confederate that he routinely referred to the Spanish forces as Yankees. And by the way, he's leading troops, half of whom are coming from the north. Wow. And he's like, come on, boys, we got them Yankees on the run. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to World War II, right? That great unifying war in which America was on the side of angels. When Shuri Castle on Okinawa in Japan fell to the Americans, the first flag that was flown was not the Stars and Stripes. It was the Confederate battle flag. The Marines there didn't have one, but one of them was from the South and had the old flag of Dixie. And that was the first flag to fly over Shuri Castle.
Mm.
It was only when, under Lyndon Johnson, the Democrats said, you know what, equal rights for everyone is probably something we need to be on the right side of, that they lost the South. And then the Republicans immediately moved to pick that up. And it culminated in 1968, Richard Nixon had what he called his Southern strategy,
mm-hmm.
which, by the way, might have been the most honest thing ever to escape his lips, which was the goal was appeal to these whites who felt that blacks were being given preferential treatment. And by the way, if you look at electoral maps, from 1968 forward, the South, with a very few exceptions, Jimmy Carter, because he was from Georgia, and Bill Clinton, who was from Arkansas, who, by the way, is vice president from Tennessee, Al Gore. But with those exceptions, the South has remained the most stable, consistently Republican voting bloc in the U.S.
Wow.
So my argument is simply this. We've let this cancer be unattended too long. And now it's metastasizing again. So this is just, I mean, just my opinion. The Confederate memorials should be moved to museums. The Confederate battle flag is now a hate symbol. So, I mean, I'm sorry for everyone who is from the South, but
look, yeah, I mean that was going to be my next question is, you know, how do we, you know, enlighten those that, you know, say that it's a part of their heritage and, you know, that have this huge fight over the Confederate flag and the Confederate symbol?
Well, let me ask you this. If you were able to trace your family history back, let's say back to West Africa.
Okay.
Okay? And let's say you found out you were related to one of the kings of Mali.
Mm.
You know, one of the most advanced kingdoms of the period. I mean, an absolutely splendid place not enough people know about. You'd be feeling pretty good about yourself.
Royalty.
Yeah. Until you find out that one of Mali's biggest exports, I'm speaking hypothetically here, was human slavery.
Mm.
Oh, crap. You know, now suddenly you're not that proud.
Oh, yeah.
But you can't deny that that's part of your history. It doesn't define you, Fred Hodges, living in the 21st century in the United States by any means.
Right.
So in that regard, I mean, to the people who say, oh, it's our heritage, is it a heritage you really want to celebrate? Could you just stick to like the Kentucky Derby and mint juleps and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and not Alexander Hamilton, he was a Yankee. But, you know, you get the idea. There are plenty of Southerners who are completely worthy of admiration. But the problem is you have this cancer eating away at Southern identity.
Mm.
And the longer you don't address it, you know, it's like someone who doesn't want to go in for the CT scan because they're afraid of what they're going to get.
Right.
It's not going to change the tumor. The tumor is still going to grow whether you check it out or not.
Right.
So, look, and, you know, I'm a Buddhist. One of the oldest symbols in Buddhism is the swastika, believe it or not. It was originally a symbol for eternal peace.
Right.
There's a reason Buddhists don't use it anymore. Adolf ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate. It ain't our fault, but there you go. So yeah, we don't use that anymore. It's time for Southerners to do the same thing with the Confederate flag. It's time to let it go because it has now been perverted into a hate symbol. So I would make this argument until the Confederacy finally surrenders 150 years later. This situation can't get resolved. The Confederacy is finally going to have to die. And by that, I mean, and let's not fool ourselves. The Confederacy was dedicated explicitly to the preservation of slavery, specifically black slavery. Now, all that sounds really depressing. But what I would like to do is, you read from Gandhi at the very beginning. So
yeah, definitely.
So my words of encouragement are actually going to come straight from him.
Oh, okay.
At one point, he was near the end of the struggle for independence with Britain. He was on one of his hunger strikes. And his followers were begging him to end the strike because it's been going on for 10 days. He wasn't a young guy.
Right.
And he said something along the lines of this, and that was that there will always be tyrants and dictators and oppressors. And for a time, they can seem invulnerable. But all of them, each and every one of them, have always fallen. What I submit to you is what we're seeing here is not the beginning of a new age.
Not at all.
This is the dying gasp, the final death rattle of an old order that realizes that just due to demographics and time, the sand is running out of the hourglass. America is becoming a much more diverse in terms of view, in terms of ethnicity, in terms of religion, place than it has ever been in the past. And there's no way they can stop that. You might as well try to stop winter from coming. Good luck. And this is just their temper tantrum, for want of a better term, trying to stop that process. The only question is how much damage will they do in a failed attempt? We can hope that, and I think the reaction we've seen is quite positive, that this is not going to gain a foothold.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like when you have a politician who ran their campaign off of hate.
Oh, clearly.
That kind of gave them the boost, the encouragement to do so.
Oh, they said so on their own website.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting is, you know, I've been wondering for months now, when, dear God, when will enough be enough for congressional Republicans? You know, they can't all be nuts. Because let's face it, if Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or any other Democrat had done a tenth of the things that are coming out now, Washington would have melted down.
Oh, most definitely.
But what you saw over the weekend, and we'll have to see if this translates to actual action. But for the first time, I actually saw the entire Republican caucus of the United States Congress as one denounce the president of the United States.
Really?
Even guys like Ted Cruz, with whom I disagree on virtually everything, up to and including the weather forecast, he denounced this. Okay, look, if you've lost Ted Cruz, you're unmoored. So I honestly think this might be it. Because let's face it, denouncing Nazis is probably the easiest layup of all in politics. You don't have to be a good politician. You don't even have to be a particularly talented politician to know that, come on, they're Nazis.
Right.
You know, how hard is this?
Right.
The fact that it took him 48 hours of badgering to go up there and sort of grumpily read off a teleprompter is to his eternal shame. And I think this might be the point where the people who are of the, let's give them a shot in November, are done for good.
And speaking of that speech, I seen no remorse. I seen literally just reading off a teleprompter.
Yes.
You know, that is that's something that, you know, he doesn't really, and this is my opinion, you know, like regardless of political view or whatever, whatever. I don't see any care.
I think here's part of the problem. First of all, he's a pathological narcissist. Which means,
this is true.
And here's the thing. I honestly, this is not meant as a compliment to Donald Trump. I don't think he has any personal animosity toward black Americans. I think, however, he's constitutionally incapable of criticizing anyone who inflates his ego and praises him. And right now, the white supremacist movement is praising him. So I don't think he's a white supremacist. I think he has absolutely no moral foundation whatsoever. And if you're praising him, then he's fine with you. So I don't know if that makes it any better. But.
Exactly. That's what I was getting ready to go. But I know you're getting ready. You have to head on out. And I definitely appreciate you for taking the time and the opportunity to speak on this matter and to, you know, give a little history of it. But I mean, as you can see, there's no change.
Well, and I'll leave you with this. First of all, thank you so much for having me. This was a joy for me to be here.
Oh, no problem.
I'd love to be back sometime because you're doing great work here at RMU. I will say this, though. It seems like change doesn't come when you're in the middle of it. And that's where most people are. Mm. We historians are weird because we don't think in terms of months or years. We think in terms of decades. Mm-hmm. Think about how far we've come in just the past 10 years. In 2004, denying LGBT citizens the right to get married helped elect a president. Mm. We've done a complete 180 on that. I mean, this summer, my own daughter came out. And when I was in high school or in middle school, this is in the 1980s, there was no closet. It was a vault.
Wow. Right.
You know, you locked yourself in. It was unthinkable to come out of the closet. And now my 13-year-old daughter, happy, cheerful, kind, smart, no shame whatsoever. This is who I am, and I could not be happier. That is a sea change from 2004 to 2017. That's only 13 years. My daughter was born in 2004. So it may seem horrible now. I promise you. Things are changing faster than we think. And I mean, just this year, the millennials became the single largest voting bloc in the United States, outpacing the baby boomers. Wow. Change is coming fast. And I am still confident we're all on the right side of it. But it has been an absolute pleasure, my friend.
Pleasure's been all mine.
Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. And that actually, it's going to kind of lead me into this week's song of the week. And that kind of goes where, you know, another Gandhi quote is, be the change that you wish to see in the world. And just like I mentioned last week, hurt people. Hate is a learned behavior. It is a behavior that is taught. You know, no one is born to hate anyone. And so, but this song of the week is actually Michael Jackson's Man in the Mirror, because if you want to see change and you want to see things that actually, you know, go the right way, no pun, you have to look at yourself. You definitely have to look at yourself. Look at the man in the mirror, because change starts with you. I mean, it's to the point that, as I always say, you know, you could be your best friend or your worst enemy, but at the end of the day, it's you who you have to look into the mirror into. And so just want to give you that, and happy listening.
Change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turned up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street, but not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them eat? A summer's disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one-man show. They follow each other on the wind, you know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one yet to know. Change is
Right, welcome back, good people. Definitely, Dr. Fanning, I want to appreciate him for taking out his time throughout his busy schedule to talk to us today. I mean, we pretty much got a history lesson and how it all kind of like, you know, transpires and it triggers back to today. I mean, the events that happened over the weekend is disheartening. It's very disheartening. It's very disheartening. It's very sad. And, you know, for those individuals who, you know, wanted to talk about someone who is doing a peaceful protest, not harming or not hurting anybody during a football game, by all means, take a look at the footage of this weekend that just passed and ask yourself the question, who's right? Who's wrong? But at any rate, you know, I think that this song of the week that I had just played is definitely beneficial towards this week because, you know, we have individuals that are very privileged. I mean, we are privileged in some kind of way. We all have privilege within us, but let us utilize our privilege to make a change. Let us utilize our privilege to enlighten and to educate and to be there and to stand firm and to stand united, the real united. As I mentioned before, you know, my heart is, you know, very heavy over the incidents that had happened over the weekend. And I definitely want to pray to the families of, you know, those that have been extremely hurt by this process, you know, hurt physically as well as hurt internally. And I will pray for the families of the young lady who had lost her life during this whole thing that had happened. But at any rate, I just want to, you know, thank you all for your time, and I hope you all continue your week to be motivating, to be positive, and to encourage one another, and to encourage one another, to be there for one another, because I mean, at the end of the day, we all we got. At the end of the day, we have each other. And at the end of the day, with all the hate in the world, the only way that we can be able to heal it is love. Thank you all. Have a wonderful week. Take care.